For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Against two of the very worst our beautiful sport has to offer, your Philadelphia Phillies went 6-0 last week. Two series sweeps at home. A beautiful thing. Can't really draw too much from it, but that's okay. You can still enjoy it. Welcome to Phillies Therapy. Ladies, gentlemen, fanatics of all ages, my name is Paul Boyer. Phillies Therapy, part of the Believe Podcast Network. I am joined, as always, by the now Cincinnati-located Matt Gelb of The Athletic. Matt, let's just get right into this, because that was exactly what the Phillies needed to do. And how often do we talk about this team and brace ourselves? Maybe this is just me. I do this a lot. Brace ourselves for them not doing what they're supposed to do. You look at an easy part of the schedule and you're like, oh, they should win most of these games, but will they? And this time they just kind of mop the floor with these guys.
Yeah, I mean, we often say that the Phillies make it more difficult than it needs to be.
They sure do.
And sometimes they do that in a lovingly way. Sometimes they do it in a maddening way. And you're right, Paul. I mean, like, one, I wondered going into the week who was the worst team. And I think I have a pretty good answer on that. The White Sox might be the worst major league team I've ever seen.
Yeah.
That's bad. And I know there's some injuries in that lineup, but I mean, the pitching is not good either. It is bleak. So I apologize to any of the White Sox fans who aren't listening, but that's rough. I mean, that is rough, but yeah, I mean, like when you say they need to take care of business, you're like, okay, like, you know, they got to, you know, if they go 4-2, you'd be like, it was good, you know, could have been better, but you know, 4-2, that's solid. You go 6-0. I mean, it's hard to sweep, no matter, even if you're playing a AAA team. Believe it or not, it is hard to sweep because baseball is weird and weird things happen. And they really did take care of business. And it's crazy. You know, we talked about all the talk was about getting off to a hot start. And, you know, sweeping the Rockies and the White Sox doesn't, you know, qualify as getting you off to a hot start. But what they've done is just banked wins.
Yes.
And this is something that they haven't been able to do the last few years. And so it's funny because Kyle Schwarber was asked about it, and he's like, you know, one of the things that made this team, you know, really what it was is that we had to keep fighting. We had to keep fighting because in previous years we dug ourselves such a hole that we had to fight our way out of it. And he's like, now, you know, I want to make sure that we don't lose that sort of mentality, that fighting mentality, just because we've banked some wins here. You know, there are fights ahead. And he's right. I mean, there are obviously bigger challenges ahead, and it starts this week here in Cincinnati against a talented Reds team that we've already seen, an athletic team. They're going to try to run like wild against the Phillies.
Yeah.
Then they go to California for six games. And so, yeah, there are bigger challenges ahead, but the fact that you not only accomplished what you set out to do, but really did it in as fine of a fashion as you could, winning six of six and then 8 of 10, you know, on the entire homestand. It was impressive. I mean, obviously the starting pitching sticks out. I mean, it's just on a different level right now.
Yeah, you know, it comes from a place of love where those of us who clearly and presently still remember the 2015 and 2016 Phillies can look at the White Sox and just be like, yeah, I feel you, bud.
Worse. I mean, they're worse than those teams were. I mean, like, I don't know. Like, yeah, it's really bad. I mean, that's really bad. Like, they'll win enough games to not make history, but like, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, yeah, come September, we're talking about them, you know, in the 62 Mets. Like, that would not surprise me. I mean, they're that bad. They are really bad.
I mean, look, credit the Phillies pitching for the most recent three games of this, but as a team, the White Sox, I'm just looking at this line and I can hardly believe it. as a team, they're hitting 188 with a 264 on base and a 288 slug. As you might imagine, those all rank last in the American League. Outside of late addition Paul DeJong and a surprisingly resurgent Gavin Sheets, there's nothing happening on the offensive side with that team. There is just nothing happening. And anybody who even looked promising at the start or a year or two ago, I think along the lines of Andrew Vaughn, they've just sort of taken a step back. Eloy Jimenez is one of the biggest mysteries to me. That guy is, he hits everything on the ground except for his one home run. That was, I guess, nice to see if you're a White Sox fan.
Yeah, it's hard, right? Because you're like, how much can you draw from these games?
Exactly.
And the answer is not a lot. But, I mean, you look at the overall picture, right? Mm-hmm. And like 22 games in, I thought this was interesting. The Phillies ERA as a team, and mm-hmm. this includes the good and the bad that we've seen, because we've seen some bad. And you eliminate the bad, which is like Connor Brogdon and Ricardo Pinto, and the right. ERA changes significantly. But right now, as a team, they have a 3.39 ERA. Last year, 22 games into the season, 4.9. I mean, they've shaved off 1.5 runs off their earned run average. And again, just 22 games. But that shows you, you know, how different the caliber of pitching has been to start this season.
Yeah, you think about it. Pinto is, he is unlikely to last on the roster for a whole lot longer. He's probably going to be the roster casualty when we assume Taijuan Walker is getting activated maybe later this week. We'll get into that in a second. Either way, he's the last man in your bullpen right now. Between him and Brogdon, somewhere around 25 to 30% of the earned runs this team has allowed so far in the season belong to those two. As like, to callously put it, dead weight. Like the very, very back.
24%.
Of the roster. Yeah, there you go. A quarter of the earned runs belong to those two guys. They are not the critical parts of the bullpen. You know, how often do we reset our expectations or cushion the impact of a bad outing from some people, especially as it gets into September, based on their role, based on what is expected of them, based on the leverage we might think they're going to be deployed in. And if you think about this team allowing, you know, that number of runs, you think back to the two games this past week that they did give themselves a bit of a headache. It belongs to one Gregory Soto outing, which, you know, we're kind of used to this by him. He's either dominant and gives up nothing, or he gives up multiple runs. And this was a multiple run outing. And then Pinto during the weekend. And that was it. And you can write off Soto as a blip. I certainly do. I still trust him. He does that from time to time. And then Pinto, you know, he's there to mop up. He's there to get outs. He couldn't quite do that. And that's probably going to cost him a spot on the roster. So it goes. You have churn. This is a pitching powerhouse right now.
It really is. You know? And I know, yeah, again, you have to accommodate for who they've faced, but nevertheless, they're first in the National League in ERA. And those six games that they just played, those are 6 out of 22. I mean, we're talking about now 22 games. They're first in the National League in ERA. And I think it's the way they've done it, Paul. Right? I mean, they've generally kept the ball in the ballpark. They're second in strikeouts, you know, third in home runs allowed. And it's not like – it's not like we talked about this, and doesn't feel like it's unsustainable. Some things might be. They won't pitch at this level all year, I don't think, but it's not wildly unsustainable, is it?
No, I don't think so. You know, the White Sox, yes, the White Sox cannot hit. The Rockies can hit. You know, it's not as if the entire week was just cushioned by facing a bunch of, you know, a bunch of wiffle ball bats. You know, that's not what this was. One thing I always want to keep in mind is thinking how good we have it right now. You know, I just talked about 2015 and 16, and I realize this team hasn't won a championship yet. So you probably, you know, you can't anoint them with anything, but just like thinking about winning streaks, right? Six game winning streaks. That's not a lot. That's not double digit games. It's good. You want to have some of those if you want to really feel like you've got some momentum and want to carry your team, you know, into the midsummer in good position to keep fighting for the division title. I just think about the Phillies. This is the seventh time since the start of 22 that they've won at least six games. All right. And that may not seem like a lot. It's not a huge number. But then you think about what they did before that. Okay. How about since the start of 2013 to the end of 2021, it's the same number of six game winning streaks. Like, this is just, it's good to appreciate what a good team can do. Competition be damned in this case for just a second. Just talking like lowercase c Catholicly. This is a talented team that is going to have more of these moments and chances to do special things as this season goes on. And I just don't want to wait until, you know, the dust settles at the end of October, early November, and really just assess from there if this team was any good. Because we are in a new golden age. We are. I would love to see it get, you know, capped off with a title, because that's really how you delineate these things. But that's what this is to me right now.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, because I want to put some more context to it.
Sure.
Right? Since 1901, there's been 123 Phillies seasons. They have won 14 of their first 22 games 17 times. That's 14% of the last 123 years, basically.
Wow. One every 7 years. Jeez.
And yes, like, the quality of the teams they played the last week was not good. But they are off to a start that we just don't see the Phillies do. They don't do this. This is not something they do as a franchise. They don't win games in March and April. And I wonder, Paul, like, when you talk about, you know, sort of stepping back and say, this is a good team. You know, the question is, how good is it? We know it's good. How good is it? Can it be great? Mm. And I do think, I wonder what the tenor would be if the Braves just weren't hovering over them in the division. Because the Phillies have been on this great start, and they're still looking up at the Braves, believe it or not, which is, you know, and the Mets have had a good week too. They lost on Sunday, but they've played better ball, I think, than a lot of us expected.
Yep.
So I agree with you. It is a good team. We're wondering, can it be great? But it would feel different, I guess, if they weren't always looking up at the Braves. And maybe they won't be come the end of September or into October. And I do think, and this is my opinion, is that I do think we will see a divisional race. I do. Like, I do think it's going to be closer than people think. And I haven't seen anything from either side yet to make me reevaluate that opinion.
That is what I want. I started out this season thinking that is the exact thing I wanted, right? Banking wins against these bad teams is critical to that whole thing. I don't want to see these 5-6 game spreads in July and August and really just kind of feel like there's so much work to be done that we're always just staring up that hill, that it's like it's a Sisyphus kind of thing. I am waiting for the Braves to fall back a bit, because I do still think there's something that's just not going to quite hold up with them. I just don't fully buy it. I think I'm talking
myself into it. Isn't it funny they lose like a great catcher? You know, they lose their starting catcher, and then, you know, their backup, very solid, could be an everyday guy in a lot of places, and hits four homers in like two games.
Right. You know, that's just that's just what they do lately. That's just what's happening. Ozzie Albies has gone down, and I'm sure, you know, we're going to talk about Luis Guillorme having a week where he hits 500 probably, or David Fletcher, you know, like one of those guys just annoyingly. It makes me think of Ryan Flaherty. Remember him a few years ago when the Phillies had him in camp? The Braves pick him up after the Phillies let him go at the end, and he has a huge series against the Phillies. Like, that kind
of stuff. He's pissed off. He thought he was going to make the Phillies. He was kind of pissed he didn't make the Phillies. I remember that. Yeah.
You know, it's just stuff like that that gets me with Atlanta.
But the Braves right now, you say the Braves, they're first in the league in batting average, first in on base, first in slug.
Oh, they keep slugging. Yeah.
Right. Where are they ERA-wise, you think, right now in the National League? Do you know where they rank?
It can't be great, because I know they've had one or two good performances. But the rotation, otherwise, especially with how Fried got off, it's probably not great, right? It's probably pretty low.
12th.
Yeah, okay. ERA. There you go.
I mean, so like, and like early season, you know, obviously things will even out. So you wonder though, like, okay, where does where does it begin to even out for the Braves? And maybe it's just that they will outslug a lot of their pitching deficiencies for the entire year. I could see that. And they've done that at times in the last 2 years, and then it has caught up with them in October. So I don't know. Again, like, what I think my takeaway from the first, you know, we're almost to 1 month in, right? We're 3.5 weeks in.
Yeah.
My takeaway is that I haven't seen anything yet from either side, the Braves or the Phillies, to tell me that this won't be a race in September to win the division.
Yeah. Nothing looks like a fluke. And that's good. You know how in the past when the Phillies lineup has slumped, and they did kind of, you know, they weren't doing great entering this past week, and it feels like they found their footing a bit. But hidden underneath the top level of the team batting lines and the performances they put up, right, there are some guys in the lineup who struggled this past week or have been struggling for most of the season. You know, Nick Castellanos is the obvious one. But Bryson Stott and JT Realmuto did not have good weeks. That is a third of your lineup that did not perform. And the rest of the lineup picked up for him. You know, it's going to be a lot of that. can the lineup pick up for the guys who are struggling? Because these struggles come in waves. Can the lineup pick up for when the pitching inevitably does have a bad couple of days? Because they will. They're not going to be, you know, they're not going to be this dominant throughout the entire year, and vice versa. You do feel better about the pitching staff picking up for the lineup if it's going to run cold. It's the fact that the pitching staff has been that good and has been picking up for the lineup that they're 14-8 right now. You know, it's good to have the lineup.
And there will be times, there's going to be times where the lineup is going to end up picking up the pitching. There will be times.
Exactly.
Like, we're probably going to look, there's going to be a stretch where the pitching is leaking a little bit. And, you know, that is when you're hoping your offense picks them up. And that's why, like, you know, you can be the optimist or pessimist and looking to say, like, they have not performed to their abilities. They're 14-8. They're lucky, you know, because they haven't hit always as they should. Or you can say, well, they banked all these wins without performing at their best. And there will be a time where the pitching will regress, the offense will improve, and that'll be the narrative for 3 weeks. And like, you're just looking for, you want them to be able to win in different ways. Like, I think if they were only winning in one way, I do think that would be a, give you a little concern. Say, okay, is this sustainable? They have won in different ways already. And I do think that's somewhat encouraging. I do.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Absolutely. The heart of the lineup, plus Johan Rojas last week, just 11 strikeouts and 93 plate appearances. That's Turner, Harper, Bohm, and then Rojas. Putting the ball in play, making contact. That's one of the signs for me, right? Like, if a guy's striking out a lot, and it's
Rojas
not
had a great week.
One strikeout in 18 plate appearances, you know?
Four stolen bases. When he gets on with a single and the base is empty in front of him, it's almost always a double.
Yeah.
And like, I think I wrote a little bit about him. There was an at-bat on Saturday, I thought, that was particularly evident of the progress he's made. And it's he takes an 0-0 fastball. There's a runner on third base, two outs, right? Mm-hmm. Got to get him in. Takes an 0-0 fastball, swings and misses at a slider down and away, chases it, 0-2. They come back with the same slider a little further away. He lays off. 1-2 pitch, it's that same fastball, kind of inside, trying to jam him inside. He took it the first pitch, and this time he turns on it, hits a single to left, drives in a run. I mean, like, there's just quicker adjustments happening for Rojas, which is what you want to see. And, like, again, he you know, whatever he's giving you at the plate is generally a bonus. And as long as he is not a complete black hole there, you're happy with it. And he's been anything but in the last, you know, really 9 days, ever since they sat him for those 2 days to start the homestand, the 8 games that followed. Were quality. They were really good.
Definitely on the upswing. Okay, we've talked about this. We teased this very briefly a couple of minutes ago. The one thing that is a little bit uncertain right now on the pitching staff is around Taijuan Walker and the likely impact it will have on the surprise emergence of Spencer Turnbull, who has had really nothing short of an amazing first four trips out on the mound. He's 2-0 record wise. The ERA is just a beautiful 1.23, but the underlying stats, they back that up for the most part. He's got 22 strikeouts in 22 innings. He's only allowed one home run. He's only walked seven guys. He's looked good. He's, you know, he's thrown a few of those sliders that have not been competitive. And sometimes it's been, you know, an inning here or there where things seem like it's getting away from him a bit. For the most part, these have been four really good starts. Now, he is still the likeliest one to be displaced by the return of Taijuan Walker, who was out on a rehab assignment. And it appears, based on information that you and the folks on the beat have been getting, that he is closer to his return, Walker is, than running out the clock on his full 30-day rehab stint. What can you tell us about what is shaping up to be an interesting roster situation and decision when Walker returns and presumably Turnbull gets bumped to the bullpen?
Yeah, I don't think there's much drama involved with this at this point, Paul. I mean, like, his next start, Walker's next start will be in the major leagues. He pitched yesterday at AAA in Scranton. And I don't think he really thought he had to be there. He told them after his last start that he was ready. They agreed to have him make one more just to get the pitch count up, and he got it to 102. We now get Statcast data for AAA. It wasn't good. I mean, it was like, it was good, not good. He threw, I think, three pitches at 90 miles an hour. And I will say that I don't know what the effort level was. And it's not to like say that he wasn't trying, but I think he was treating it like his last spring start.
That's a good point.
Or maybe even less than that. And it was 46 degrees in Scranton at first pitch. So
My alma mater. I miss it so much.
The Electric City.
Yeah.
But he's going to be here with the team in Cincinnati. He will pitch sometime this weekend in San Diego. I think it's a matter of – I think they're still deciding what day. It wouldn't surprise me if they tried to put somebody between the two lefties, you know, if Walker slots between Suarez and Sanchez, just so they don't have lefties going back-to-back days all the time. There is a possibility that they go to a six-man rotation for a week or two, you know, maybe one or two turns. I don't think they will. I think it's possible, but in all likelihood, Turnbull becomes the long man in the bullpen. I just think that the six-man rotation would make sense if only for they worry about being caught short in the bullpen. Because when you have six starters, you now have one fewer relievers because you're only allowed to carry 13 pitchers. So you'd have seven relievers. You wouldn't have a traditional long man back there if something happened, you know, to one of your starters on a given day. Your guy who's most stretched out is like Strom or Marte, I don't know, and you're not really looking to use them as, you know, mop up or long guys. So look, like, this is a decision that is not necessarily permanent. Taiwan Walker's contract status, and nobody will say that this is the reason, but it is the reason. I mean, his contract status affords him the chance to prove that he can be a contributor on a contending team as a fifth starter. And let's call it what it is, because he is the fifth starter now.
Yeah.
I mean, Christopher Sanchez has eclipsed him on the depth chart. Christopher Sanchez has been terrific.
Yeah.
You know, is what he's doing totally sustainable? Probably not, but he's, I think he's better than a five at this point. I think we very clearly can slot him on like that four line and say that this is a reasonable tier for him.
Absolutely.
Now. So you're asking Walker to be a really high priced fifth starter. And it is what it is. At this point, you almost have to ignore the contract, you know, in terms of evaluating him, because I don't think they're going to get the return on the investment that they expected when they signed him to a 4-year, $72 million deal. How important is velocity for him? I don't know. I do think it's important. I think it's important for him to be pitching at 93-ish because it just makes his splitter better. His splitter is his best pitch. And so the fastball velocity isn't less about, you know, oh, can he get the fastball by guys? It's more about like the splitter just plays better when the fastball is at 93, 94. He didn't really get there in his rehab outings. Could he get a little bump pitching to majors? Better weather, for sure, no doubt. I think this is a conversation that they'll try to kick down the road until June. I think Walker gets 3, 4, 5 starts. And if the results aren't there, if he's not performing well, that's when they have going to have the difficult talk. And maybe they don't get to that point. Maybe Walker is a competent, capable, league average fifth starter who gives you 5, 6 innings every fifth day and keeps you in a game, which is essentially what he did last year. It wasn't always pretty, but he did it. And Turnbull, they'll need him. I mean, like, the fact that they were debating about, you know, they have too many starting pitchers. Paul, I can assure you that there will reach a point in this season where they will not have enough starting pitching.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. There's already 5 teams in baseball this year that have used 8 different starters. And this is not bad teams. This is the Dodgers, the Red Sox, the Cubs, the Brewers, the Astros have all used 8 starters already. The Phillies are one of only 4 teams to this point that have used just 5 guys. And you're going to need Turnbull. And in fact, he wasn't going to make 30 starts this year. They didn't even, you know, I think he's already paid. You know, I mean, like, he's blown them away. Like, I don't think that even like their most wild expectations were not even close to this.
No.
And so they'll take it as found money for right now. And they'll also, they have the ability to play the long game with Turnbull. And that's great. Like, getting him out of the rotation now, making him the long guy, keeping him around, working on a few things, keeping him fresh, keep managing the innings, reserving the right to put him back in the rotation if they think it's necessary or if somebody else gets hurt, which is bound to happen. It's a great spot to be in. It seriously is. Like, people are going to, like, really, there's going to be a lot of hand-wringing over this week when Walker comes back. It's a great spot for them to be in.
Yeah. It's hard to disagree. You know, I look at last year as instructive for a situation like this. And that timeline that you just laid out kind of makes sense to me, right? Think about Walker getting that leash of about a month, maybe 5 weeks worth of starts. See what he can do. Stick with a five-man rotation. Bump Turnbull back. And then, you know, in that case, Pinto is probably off the roster, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
If you get into the middle of the summer, right, you think about last year, what they did when they turned to a six man for a couple of turns, right? Yep. Where they had Suarez, Walker, Wheeler, Nola, Sanchez, and
Lorenzen.
And Michael Lorenzen came into the mix later. They were managing everybody at that point, because I think something, I think there is a strategic thing happening with, you know, maybe it's a Cotham and the pitching coach staff plan. Maybe it's a hire in the front office kind of thing. I think they've kind of figured something with regard to managing midsummer workloads and trying to avoid what you were just talking about. You know, spending too many bullets, trying to keep guys fresh for the stretch run and making it work with the roster they have. I don't think it's an exact science, but it's something I'm looking at and something I'm paying attention to, because maybe they do go to a six man if they feel like at that point, I don't know, maybe they do an option thing with Kirkering if, you know, maybe if he struggles a little bit, but also to try and manage his workload, because I'm sure they're going to ease him in. You can think about, I don't love the idea of optioning Marte if he continues to pitch well, but he does have an option. You figure
he's probably pitched pretty well.
He has. Yeah. You figure he's probably somebody who has that flexibility. You know, if a Luis Ortiz is healthy by that point, they need to have innings in the bullpen while they're on a six man. That could happen.
He's going to start a rehab this week. I know it hasn't been, yeah, he's like the last guy in a bullpen, but they like him and he is useful. He's going to pitch for Clearwater this week.
Right. And I think of him as the multi-inning guy. If you're going to run a six man rotation, you need somebody who can eat it up a little bit.
Absolutely.
And he's somebody who I would turn to in that situation. I think he's better suited for that than Pinto. So it seems like it makes sense, right? Laying that out there, coming into this, as long as everybody's on board, you would hope that Turnbull understands this, that he is hopefully of the same mind, like, oh man, okay, I know I can do this. I've been back and forth between the rotation and the bullpen before. Now I've shown my stuff. I know I'm the next in line in case, you know, Walker does struggle, or if somebody else gets hurt, I am going to be the guy who gets back in there. And in the meantime, I keep pitching in the major leagues. That's the only thing that I think I would give a second thought to. I would hope he's okay with that. I hope he makes the transition into, you know, relief smoothly and that everything keeps working well, because otherwise you're exactly right. This is the kind of position you want to be in, where you have guys getting healthy, major league caliber guys getting healthy, and you need to find ways to make it all work.
If anything, he pitched too well. Yeah. You know, because there was, you know, right. He's got 5+ years of service time, which means that if they were to try to option him, he does have an option left, he would have to consent to it. Mm. And, you know, obviously, like, he wouldn't consent to it now, because, like, if he were to, you know, they've tried to option him, he just declines it, becomes a free agent, and somebody signs him.
Yes.
Because he's pitched so well. Yes. So
I agree.
So he's almost pitched too well, but I think they'll take that as, you know, as opposed to the alternative. But, you know, I'm looking at his contract right now because I have it pulled up. He does have incentives, right? And they're tied different ways. He gets bonuses for a game started, but also for innings pitched. So even by moving into the bullpen, like, he might not hit some of those incentive targets for game started. Like, he probably wasn't gonna hit them anyway, because I don't think he's gonna make a ton of starts, but he can still get them the innings route. He very clearly wants to keep starting. I think he's made that well known, and I guarantee you he pitches well on Wednesday night here in Cincinnati and makes it, you know, like, even tougher for them. But it's not tough. I mean, I think they've already decided what they're going to do. If anything, if he pitches well on Wednesday, maybe they let him take one more turn, right, before putting him in the bullpen. That's why I could see them leave the door just slightly ajar to a six-man rotation once or twice through. But I do think, Paul, you're right. The time for them to go toward the six would be in the summertime. And they've done that each of the last 2 years. So that is something that they will do again. And whether it's Turnbull being that sixth guy or Walker or whatever, somebody else, I guess we'll see. But I understand the skepticism about Walker. I also think that we need to see it. He needs to prove that he can or cannot contribute to this team. And the only way to do that is by letting him pitch and not evaluating him on every start. You know, if he has a bad first start, he's going to start again. Like, you know, I'm not like breaking any news here, but he will start again and he'll probably make a third start. And unless those first three are absolutely horrendous, I'm assuming he's going to make a fourth start. And that's just how you have to take this right now. Like, you need to know. And this is the time to find out. It's May. It's going to be May. It's April. It's going to be May.
It's going to be May. One final note before we leave you for this week. The Phillies have been home for three of the first four weekends. I'm just looking at these.
A lot of home games. Summers.
A lot of home games. And you know what? Still really, really strong numbers. First of all, I think it's funny.
In terms of what?
In terms of attendance. Yeah.
You know, yeah, actually, crowds are pretty good. The weather hasn't been, the weather's just been okay, right?
It
hasn't been
great. The weather has been even less than okay earlier. I think it's funny, first of all, that the official number has 16 more people in attendance for game two of the year than the home opener. But you just look at, you know, again, Colorado and the Chicago White Sox drew 35,000 plus every day. And then we were over 44 and 43 for the Saturday and Sunday games.
Their season ticket base is way up. And so that will help a lot of their numbers. But yeah, I mean, yeah, where do they rank? They're sixth in average attendance this year. Surprised me. I thought they'd be higher. They're right there.
Yeah. It's really cool to turn on a game and see, you know, the lower bowl up through the 400s, just looking full, just every game. Just the seats are full. You know, it's just great. It's really pleasing for me to sit on my couch and look at the stadium and every crowd shot that gets included anywhere they're looking, the seat, like everybody's there. It's great. It's just, it makes for just a better viewing experience. It's just one of those boxes to check. So nice work.
Yeah.
Everybody.
I mean, I think in the summertime, it's going to be a lot of fun. I think it could be, you know, even more fun if they haven't dug themselves a hole again. And, you know, we'll see the proof. You know, what did we say a week ago when we recorded this? If we're having the same conversation in a week that they're struggling, that there's issues, yeah. then we can say we can start sound all the alarms. And very clearly, this week was a get right week, like we like we hypothesized it could be. And it was one thing to predict it; it was another thing for them to do it. They did it. Now, you know, let's see. Can they take it to another gear? You know, against better competition. And the schedule does get a little more challenging. I mean, after this trip, they've got the Giants and the Jays at home, and then they'll have some Mets games. They have the Rangers at the end of May. They have the Giants again. They have a trip, you know, to your favorite place, San Francisco, at the end of May. So God. I mean, the schedule's a little more challenging. A few more off days, at least, like mixed in May, which I think they'll be, which they'll take. But you know, they really got the bullpen off their feet this past week, and I do think there was some grousing maybe from the bullpen just about how they were being used early on, but there were so many close games that, you know, you had to use your guys a lot. But the rotation really took care of that. And the offense really took care of it, because they opened up big leads in a lot of these games in the last week. And so honestly, some of the relievers probably are like wanting to pitch right now because they haven't pitched a lot. They've had to try to get some guys work. You know, Nola could have finished the game Sunday, but they got him out after eight innings and 91 pitches. And Rob Thompson said, I even might have taken him out after seven because I wanted to get guys work. So bullpen is rested. I'm sure they will be used more this week here in Cincinnati. And I look forward. I think it's going to be a good series. And Ranger Suarez, we even mentioned him. He throws a complete game shutout. He gets the ball in the opener against the Reds. And man, like, he just seems like he's taking that next step.
Man, we keep talking about all these good problems to have. All right, that's a nice little weekly recap. I think we should have more of these weeks. But as far as the week ahead goes,
I really don't want to see the White Sox again play baseball. I'm good. I've seen enough.
Yeah, when is that trip? When do they go out to guaranteed rate field? They don't.
2025.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
No, it's, you just play a team. Yeah,
it's in the AL, right? I keep getting the balance schedule.
Well, the new rules are different. Yeah.
Okay. Fine. Good. Don't have to deal with that anymore. All right, we'll continue to look ahead, not as far as 2025, but as far as the week ahead goes. Matt, what should we be looking for on the lovely digital pages of The Athletic?
I don't know. I have some ideas. We'll see. Okay. A friend of the pod, maybe Robert Orr, who does amazing stuff at Baseball Prospectus.
Hi, Rob.
We've talked about Rob before. I mean, he's It's amazing that nobody's hired him, although I think somebody probably will. But he remarked in one of his recent stories about, it was about the Phillies actually, about how it's like, it's just so April baseball. It's like, you know, as a writer, like you want to draw conclusions, you want to, you know, focus on some trends or highlight some interesting things you've seen, but then you're just like, is this real? Or like, am I reading too much into this? And you want to really be careful and toe that line. April's tough.
Right?
No, because we just saw them play. I mean, we, you know, they went 6-0, and like, that is, you know, it's a great week for them, but it's like, you know, would we be surprised at all if you saw them, you know, struggle this week because they're facing better teams? Not at all. I mean, no. So it's like, what do you, and what's more real, you know? And you know, like the Schwarber, for example, like Schwarber, he's, it feels like he's been better, right? But his numbers are almost exactly the same as they were this time last year. He's just gotten there in a very different way. And I wrote a little bit about him today at The Athletic. I think it's interesting, like his different approach. He's swinging at the first pitch a lot more. And he hit a first pitch home run yesterday. Just pay attention, especially in the first inning, the first at bat of the game. He's just, if he sees a pitch he likes, he's going to swing at it. And I think that's kind of interesting.
All right, with the tougher test ahead, road games at Cincinnati and then at San Diego for staying out west early next week against the Angels. Should be a little bit more interesting this week. Can't really expect to have the same kind of easy results that we saw for most of last week, but, you know, maybe that's just the kind of test this team needs now that they've had their get right week. Thank you once again, everybody, for joining us on another episode of Phillies Therapy, part of the Believe Network. For Matt at The Athletic, I'm Paul. We'll catch you next week.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.